those who become bridge builders in our society have a very special place. And Minnie Minoso did that. And he didn't just do it for those who were there, who got a chance to enjoy him there in Chicago, on the field and off the field. But he, as you can tell, he did it for legions of others who he inspired. And I think that is exemplary of what a Hall of Famer is all about.
That's Bob Kenrick, president of the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum in Kansas City, talking about the one and only Minnie Minoso, who could be on the verge of finally getting into the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, a place where he rightfully belongs. Hey, everyone, it's Chuck Arfine. Welcome to the White Sox Talk podcast brought to you by Wintrust. Often referred to as the Latino Jackie Robinson, Minnie Minoso broke down racial barriers in the game of baseball and in society in the 1950s. He was the first Black player on the White Sox, and he was the first Black Cuban to play in the major leagues. What he was and who he was, both on the field and off of it during this time, should have gotten him into Cooperstown years ago, decades ago, but sadly never happened when he was alive. But now Minoso is back on the ballot, a candidate for the Golden Era Committee that votes on December the 5th. It is a chance for the game to turn a wrong into a right. And here on the podcast, I'll be joined by Chris Kamka to explain why Minoso should be in the Hall of Fame. And you're going to hear more from Bob Kenrick, as well as Eduardo Perez, son of Tony Perez, the Hall of Famer who was also born in Cuba, and his idol, like so many others, was Minnie. Why Minnie Minoso belongs in the Hall of Fame. It's coming your way.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
At Wintrust, we know true fans show their team pride every chance they get. With White Sox checking, you'll score a Sox debit card. Plus, you'll get a special offer when you open online today at Wintrust.com/SoxTalk. $100 required to open. Member FDIC.
White Sox! White Sox! Go! Go! White Sox!
That ball hit deep, way back! Deep to left field!
Holy cow! Carlton Fisk has put the White Sox ahead!
Jimenez leaves the ballpark!
You can't put it on the board! Yes!
We got a chance to do something real special.
All right, sit back, relax, and strap it down. It's time for the White Sox Talk podcast. All right, with me it is Chris Kamka, our expert statistician, numbers guru. But you know what? Like, you're more than that, Chris. You were also a champion for the case of Minnie Minoso. You've been talking about this for so long, and now we're getting close to it, where it looks like, and we're going to get into his chances of getting into the Hall of Fame this year. We're going to hear something that Joe Posnanski had said here on the podcast this year. But your thoughts on just the candidacy of Minoso and why he belongs in the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, so, you know, statistical guru aside, to understand truly Minnie Minoso's case of getting into the Hall of Fame, you'd have to do more than that. It's more than that. I mean, there's a good element of statistical stuff, of course, but then it's like 50-50. Half of it has nothing to do with stats, and we'll get into that a little later.
Yeah.
But I think he's got good chances, and let's talk about it.
Yeah. I want to begin with a quote from Orlando Cepeda, a Hall of Famer himself. This was his quote that he gave. And this goes into the cultural part of it. And we're going to kind of maybe jump around between the cultural impact and then just the stats itself and why he belongs in. But this kind of says it all. Forget about the stats. Just look at the impact. He said, Orestes Minoso, which was Minnie's real name, was the Jackie Robinson for all Latinos. the first star who opened doors for all Latin American players. He was everybody's hero. I wanted to be Minoso. Clemente wanted to be Minoso. And, you know, Tony Perez wanted to be Minoso. I mean, so many people did. That's what he meant to that country. And that's what he meant to the game of baseball, right?
You said Cepeda. I knew exactly what quote you were going to. I have it right on a piece of paper in front of me. You can't underestimate the importance and significance of that quote. The last one, Clemente wanted to be Minoso. Okay, here's the thing. A lot of people give Roberto Clemente credit for being what Minnie Minoso was. When you talk about trailblazers for dark-skinned Latinos in baseball, that Minnie Minoso was, you know, several years before Clemente. If you take a look at the players that reached the American / National Leagues, the black players to reach the majors first, it's Jackie Robinson, Larry Doby, Hank Thompson, Willard Brown, Dan Bankhead, Roy Campanella, Satchel Paige. Minnie Minoso was eighth. But the important thing is, let's go down the birthplaces. Georgia, South Carolina, Oklahoma, Texas, Alabama, Pennsylvania, Alabama, Cuba. That's the first one from Latin America. So not only did he have the prejudice of his skin color against him, he had the language barrier as well. He was the first guy to have both of those things and reach the major leagues, and he did it with class. I mean, he is one of the greatest, ambassadors the game have ever seen. I mean, everybody in Chicagoland knows what I'm talking about. You go to the grocery store. Oh, look, there's Minnie wearing his signature Seven Decades hat. And he would always stop to talk baseball with everybody. He was incredibly kind. He loved the game. They called him Mr. White Sox. And think about it. This is a franchise that goes back to 1900. 1901 is a major league. And Minnie Minoso is Mr. White Sox.
Yeah.
The first black player in White Sox history to take the field. The first black player in Chicago Major League Baseball history. He predated Ernie Banks by a couple of years.
How about this? So I looked this up. The Chicago Daily Tribune, May 1st, 1951. This is Minoso's first game. He's just been traded to the White Sox from the Indians. He was 25. Okay. You know,
depending on who you believe.
Okay. Well, how old do you think
that's
he
always
was?
That's always part of the fun lore, by the way. No one knew his true age, but we'll go with 25.
Okay. So Irving Vaughn was the sports writer covering the White Sox for the Tribune. This was written in the paper. This is 1951 for his debut game. And I am quoting this in the story. Occupying third base for Paul Richards' team. Paul Richards was the manager of the White Sox. Will be the Cuban Negro Orestes Minoso. That was literally in the paper. Can you believe that?
I can, because I've read enough of that.
But that should shock you, right? I mean, this was the climate that Minnie Minoso walked into in 1951.
Yeah, and then when you read quotes from Minnie from reporters in the paper, it's, I peaked up the ball. And, I mean, nobody would do that today. It's absurd to quote a guy like that using, you know, this pidgin English. And that's what he had to endure, you know, and he excelled. He's one of the finest players in baseball.
Okay, so he bats third, first game. Okay, bats third in his first game. First at bat, it's against the Yankees. And I think you probably know what he did in his first at bat because you know him so well.
I know what he did. He homered.
He hit a homer. Off Vic, is it Rashi? How do you say his last name? Rashi?
I believe it's Rashi.
Rashi. Who's Vic Rashi? I didn't even know who he was. I looked him up. This guy had won 20 or more games the three previous seasons, all-star games, all three seasons.
Oh, yeah.
First at bat in Minnie Minoso's career, he hits a homer off of him.
Yep. He was a good pitcher.
Who else was a rookie in that game for the Yankees? And who homered, else? What's that?
Yeah, Mickey Mantle. He hit his first major league homer in that game.
Yes, he did. So in the same game that Minnie Minoso hits his first home run with the White Sox, and it was his second major league home run because he had a few at bats with the Indians, hit a home run for them. Mickey Mantle hits his first major league homer in that game. That's amazing.
That's cool trivia. It really is.
And I want to bring this up to you to kind of give us some perspective. And what if the roles were reversed? So Mickey Mantle, who we all know is, you know, one of the greatest players of all time, because he was white, he made his debut when he was 19 years old. And he played when he was 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24. Had 173 homers, 907 hits in that time. But because Manny Minoso was from Cuba, but also when what year did he come to the United States? Do you know?
He was like 46.
Okay. So Manny Minoso, when he was 21, maybe even 19, was good enough to probably get to the majors, but because of the color of his skin, he wasn't there. And that affects his numbers, correct?
Sure does. And if you look at it, he didn't reach the majors until 49. He could have, he was signed by the Indians, you know, earlier. 49 and 50, he could have easily played in the majors right there, let alone before that. He played two amazing seasons in the Pacific Coast League with San Diego. His numbers are fantastic.
I've got one of them here. Can I share them with you?
Sure.
Okay. 1950. So the year before he comes to the majors with the White Sox, he bats 339 with 20 homers, 40 doubles, 10 triples, 115 RBIs, 30 stolen bases. Mm-hmm. I think he was ready for the majors.
Now, to the Cleveland Indians' defense, they had a decent enough reason for keeping him. They were stacked. They coming off the 1948 World Series. Still haven't won one since. But that they were a World Series championship team, and they added him. So they could have played
him somewhere else, right?
They could have, but I'm not going to place the blame on them as much as I'm going to place the blame on the rest of the league. Now, but Minoso, like I said, was the eighth black player to reach the American and National League. Those eight players came up with three teams. All right, we're talking about a 16 team league. What about the other 13? Mm-hmm. I mean, the fact that the only Browns, Dodgers, and the Indians were willing to sign black players at that point and bring them up, some other team shouldn't have been able to do it. The Indians were a World Series team. They're coming off, you know, they were excellent. They had guys in place everywhere. I can see, okay, he's kind of untested in the majors. We don't know what he'll do. We had a team good enough to win. I can see it. But it just doesn't let the other teams off the hook. Any one of those other teams could have signed him. He could have come up to the majors much earlier.
So his numbers don't jump off the page when you compare him to the guys who played for 20 years. He doesn't have 3,000 hits, never won an MVP. Okay.
1954. I mean, those numbers.
Let's get into it. So what happened?
But I think... All right, so you're not gonna hang with the guys who played 20 years. So how about this? Let's look at a decade, the 1950s. And given the fact that he didn't even play in the majors in 1950, keep that in mind as we go over this. Position player wins above replacement during the 50s. It's Mantle, Musial, Mays, Duke Snyder, Eddie Matthews, Richie Ashburn, Yogi Berra. Yogi or Manny Minoso, eighth. But if you do just the American League, he's third. So this is clearly, in my opinion, one of the top 10 players in the American League during an entire decade. And the style of play, you know, he could hit for average. He could play play defense. Look, the first 3 years that they're handing out gold gloves, Manny Minoso won one. So
in his 30s.
Yep. He was in his 30s. He stole bases. He hit home runs. He was an all-around player. One of the 10 best players and all those players I rattle off that are ahead of him in war, all in the Hall of Fame, plus the next five guys after Minoso in that 1950s war list, Ted Williams, Jackie Robinson, Ernie Banks, Larry Doby, Nellie Fox. So the top 13 in war during the 1950s are all in the Hall of Fame, except one man we're talking about today, Manny Minoso. It's a joke. One of the most dominant, memorable, exciting players during the 1950s. And he could have had even more because he got a late start due to prejudice.
Yeah.
And he should have gotten here earlier.
All right. So 1951, he's a rookie and he has an amazing season. He finishes fourth in MVP vote. Fourth. Does not win Rookie of the Year.
He got robbed.
Okay. So this guy named Gil McDougald of the Yankees. I mean, I don't even want to even like share you the numbers because it's just ludicrous, but let's just say Manoso. Yeah, Manoso.
He's biased.
I mean, there's such it's despicable. I'm looking at the numbers here. Like Manoso had 173 hits, McDougal 123. Doubles, Manoso led him 34-23, triples 14-4, runs batted in 76-63. I mean, it's just it's ludicrous. And here's a quote I found. This is from White Sox general manager Frank Lane about the fact that Manoso doesn't win Rookie of the Year to a guy on the Yankees and they won the pennant. Quote, "It begins to appear that you have to be on a pennant winner to capture the rookie award or the most valuable player honor. If that's the way they are picked, both awards might as well be abandoned."
Well, I mean,
and he also said this, "Moreover, Manoso, in my estimation, was the most valuable player of the league. It certainly wasn't Yogi Berra," end quote. That was his rookie year.
It's one of the best rookie seasons ever.
And I'm laughing at this because it's ludicrous. There were barriers for Manny Manoso almost every step of the way, not just to get to the major leagues. He gets here, okay, and he's, you know, New York Yankee white bias, let's just be honest, for the Rookie of the Year award.
Yep.
And then is there any explanation as to why for 10 out of 11 years, he led the majors in getting, or actually the American League, I think, in getting hit by pitches?
Well, I mean, yeah, I think I know what you're getting at. And I think you got a legitimate, legitimate case there.
The only year he did not lead the American League in getting hit by pitches, he played in only 139 games. I mean, it was like almost as if he would have played the full season, then it's 11 out of 11 years he's getting hit by pitches the most. Like, that's the kind of stuff that I'm like reading in between the lines here, but thinking, I mean, he was facing stuff that we're not even considering. And on top of all of it, like, that's the kind of hatred. And it's like the nicest guy too, just because the color of his skin, he was dealing with this on the field, off the field, all the time.
I mean, how many American League rookies have had 30 stolen bases, 100 runs, and 400 on base percentage? One, Manny Manoso, that's it. It's one of the greatest rookie seasons of all time. It's beyond, and let me add one thing to statistical argument. You know, this past year that – you know, Major League Baseball has declared Negro Leagues major leagues, which is the correct way anyway. And when you add those numbers to his MLB totals, it's all MLB now. It's kind of confusing. But if you add the Negro League and his AL/NL numbers together, he now has 2,110 hits. He has 195 homers. He has a 216 stolen bases. Is a .299 batting average and a .387 on base percentage. Now, how many players besides Manoso has reached all five of those criteria? Larry Walker. It's the only other guy with at least 2,110 hits, 185 homers, 216 steals, .299 batting average, and a .387 on base. Barry Bonds missed that by one batting average point. I mean, these are excellent numbers. The on-base percentage, I think, is one thing. .387 career on-base percentage. On-base percentage for years just wasn't valued properly.
Yeah.
And today, you know, as you get, you know, move on through the years, today he's probably more appreciated than he ever was. And I think this is, it's ready. We're ready for this. He's going to get into the Hall of Fame.
By taking a quick time out on the White Sox Talk podcast, we're coming right back.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's Byte.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Did you know that 80% of the grass-fed beef sold in the U.S. is imported from overseas? That's why I get my meat from GoodRanchers.com. When you buy Good Ranchers, not only are you getting amazing meat, but you're also supporting American farms. GoodRanchers.com safely delivers American craft beef, better than organic chicken, and more. Delivered quickly and safely to your door. Don't play the grocery store guessing game. Know where your meat comes from with GoodRanchers.com. Go to GoodRanchers.com and use the code Chicago for $20 off and free express shipping. He brought speed also to the game. At a time, there wasn't a ton of speed, right? And he brought the go to the go-go Sox. And you can, and also, like, we, the one thing we always look at, now when I say we, it's the voters, okay? And we as fans. It was always like, okay, how many home runs does he have? What's his batting average? How many hits? All right, well, he was hitting home runs or trying to hit home runs in the toughest park in the majors to hit home runs in, and that was Old Comiskey Park. If he played in New York, well, especially these lefty batters who were playing in New York and the short porch, I mean, there were cheap home runs all over the place. Yep. He didn't have that luxury, did Manny Mendoza, but he still hit home runs.
You made the point about his speed as well. That was during a time where there really wasn't that much base stealing.
Yeah.
Back to the 1950s. How many players had 100 homers, 100 steals, and hit at least 300 throughout the 1950s? The answer is two. Manny Mendoza and Willie Mays. That's pretty good company there. If you take a look at batting average on base percentage, he had a 300 batting average and a 400 on base percentage at least during the 1950s. How many players had at least 3,000 plate appearances with a 300, 400 during the 1950s. Minimum 3,000 plate appearances. The answer is two or five. It's five. Ted Williams, Jackie Robinson, Stan Musial, Mickey Mantle, Manny Mendoza. I mean, those aren't just Hall of Fame names. Those are upper echelon Hall of Fame names. And he's part of that company as well. Yeah, no question.
And everyone listening, I want you to know that Chris is not reading something as he's saying this. It's off the top of his head. He's literally like, it's all in his brain stored there.
I memorize these things because they're so amazing that they jump off the page when you first read them and you commit them to memory and that's it. What happened? I mean, he was on the Golden Era ballot before and he missed it.
In 2015.
He was on the Special Negro League Committee in 2006 and he missed it. Well, they said, okay, you didn't play enough in the Negro Leagues. Okay, fine. And then you go to the major leagues, well, you didn't play enough in the major leagues. Well, listen, you have to consider the totality of somebody's career when you consider them. It just wasn't fair how it's like, okay, we're going to judge this guy on this chunk of his career only and then this chunk of his career only. You have to look at the entire thing.
Yeah.
So when you look at statistically, Manny Mendoza is a Hall of Famer. And then when you add the fact that he was a pioneer for Black Latinos, he was a great ambassador to the game, a legend to Chicagoans and Chicago baseball, the first Black player to take the field for either the White Sox or the Cubs. These are huge deals that taken all together, it's just obvious that this man's a Hall of Famer. And let me bring something else up. I mean, the impact of this man's life. Let me read you another quote.
Okay.
Many may have been passed over by the Baseball Hall of Fame during his lifetime, but for me and for generations of Black and Latino young people, Manny's quintessentially American story embodies far more than a plaque ever could. That quote's from President Barack Obama on the passing of Manny Minoso. I mean, how many figures get a statement from the president? It's the importance of the man, a great player, and he was important. Stuff that goes beyond the scope of statistics.
So the White Sox held a press conference slash kind of like a round table discussion with Jose Contreras, who is a Cuban native and was very close friends with Manny Minoso, Eduardo Perez, son of Tony Perez. Tony looked up to Minoso. That was his idol. And Eduardo played 13 years in the majors. He works for ESPN. And then Bob Kendrick, president of the Negro League Baseball Museum. They were all a part of this press conference. And I want to play for you something that Eduardo said and then what Bob Kendrick said about Minoso, what he meant, what he dealt with, and why it is so significant, his place in the game, and why he belongs in Cooperstown.
The struggle that I know from the history of my father to be able to leave his country, not knowing when he was going to come back and make a new life here in the United States is really difficult to comprehend, to understand. And, you know, I've had the privilege to go to Cuba and visit my family, and so much that he left behind to start a new life. And this was in the 60s. So just imagine Manny Minoso doing this, leaving in the 40s, a country that he knows, the island that he takes pride in, and trying to go and achieve a dream, not knowing the language, having to learn it. The advice he gave, the advice that he just gave right there to Jose early on about, you have to learn the language, you have to learn the culture to be able to survive and be able to do it well. But he did it in an era that is unfathomable right now to us. To me, it is. And those are my heroes. Those are the people that I look up to, because I understand how hard it was from the stories that I heard to be able to even have success. Many tried, many were able to be successful. But as successful as Manny was in being able to be a hero to those aspiring young players, it would be great. Look, I'm going to turn this camera over to the right, to the other right. I'm sorry, I'm going the wrong way. But I just want to show you guys, because this, for me, means everything. And this is when these Hall of Famers, these are the Latino Hall of Famers, right? There were more after this list right here. But Carew meant the world to me as a hitting coach. Clemente carried me when I was a baby. Marichal, one of my dad's ultimate friends now here. My father, Luis Aparicio, Martin Diego, the other Cuban in the Hall of Fame, and Orlando Cepeda, my godfather. The history is always there, and it always will be for me, and it's important for me to be able to tell those stories moving forward. And Manny Minoso, he being my dad's hero, I'm going to make sure that his name continues to be mentioned as one of the greats of all time. And the greats of all time belong in Cooperstown. And that's hopefully where he'll be December 5th.
It's so exciting. As I mentioned, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of tears for me, because again, I knew Manny, and I can hear his voice in my head talking about being called the N-word when he didn't even know what it meant. You know, because his skin was as dark as mine, and yet still being able to persevere and still bring such great joy to this game under some of the most challenging sets of circumstances that anyone could ever face playing this game. And for me, as Eduardo talks about the Cuban pride, you know, I share that because we share a brotherhood. There is a bond. And so on that day, it gives me a chance to reflect on Cristobal Torriente and Jose Mendez, you know, Martin de Higo, These are players all from the Negro League that played in the Negro Leagues who are right now in the National Baseball Hall of Fame. Yeah. I can't wait to hear Manny Minoso's name added with them. And I also, I'll be remiss if I didn't say, I hope my friend Oliva gets that same call. You know, so we got a chance here for this to be really special, you know, and so because he deserves it. So, like I said, I'm going to be on pins and needles. There'll probably be some tears one way or the other. You know, if they get in, it'll be some tears of joy. If they don't get in, it'll be some tears of sadness. Because I honestly believe in the bottom of my heart, Manny Minoso deserves to be in the National Baseball Hall of Fame.
And we're going to find out, Chris, December 5th. So this is another golden era committee that's meeting at the winter meetings, even though there's not technically the kind of winter meetings we normally have. It sounds like we're not going to have them because of the CBA, but they will be meeting and voting on this. And you know, it does sound like he's got a great chance to get in. I don't want to get ahead of myself, but do you feel like he's getting in, Chris?
100%.
100%.
I mean, I feel strong about this. I mean, there's a few things in his favor that have happened recently, and that is when Major League Baseball declared the Negro Leagues a major league, as they should have been all along. Because if you say, okay, yeah, you know, the totality of his career, well, if you take the stuff before he reached the Indians and the White Sox, that stuff, he was playing Major League Baseball for a few years. Not only that, he was an all-star level performer. The first Black player in Chicago, which I can't emphasize that enough, that was when he came to Chicago and played in his first game. Chicago was the second biggest city in the country, ahead of LA at that point. And Chicago was like a mecca of Black baseball. Chicago hosted the East-West game, All-Star game, every year throughout the first 20 or so years it was held in the Negro League. Beyond that, that's a big deal culturally. Plus, I mean, you mentioned Joe Posnanski. Posnanski listed him the number one omission from the
Yeah, I want to get to that. Yeah, I want to get to that. So can I just, because I've got this in front of me. So Joe Posnanski, yes. Incredible baseball writer, historian, works for The Athletic, writes for all sorts of outlets. He came on the podcast last January to talk about that article that he wrote. It was more than an article. It was like a manifesto. He chronicled the top 100 players not in the Hall of Fame. Minoso was number one. And here was his quote, and then we're going to hear from Joe. His quote was this: while you can make powerful arguments why Barry Bonds or Roger Clemens or Pete Rose or Shoeless Joe Jackson do not have a place in the Hall of Fame, no such arguments exist for Minoso. He was a great player, a pioneer, and a powerful force for good within the game. Every day that he's not in the Hall is a day that the Hall of Fame itself is diminished. End quote from Posnanski.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, listen, I've been singing the praises of Manny Minoso for a long time. And I sit here on this podcast, like jumbling my words. I can't form complete sentences, you know, but then you read what Joe Posnanski read and it's like, yes, this is exactly what I've been trying to say if I was able to communicate in a reasonable manner.
You're doing a great job communicating it.
If you are on the fence for Manny Minoso's Hall of Fame case, please read what Posnanski wrote. It's on The Athletic. I'm sure you can find it elsewhere.
It's easy, very easy to find. Just Google Posnanski and Minoso. Yes.
The Outsiders, number one, Manny Minoso. Find that and read it. He states it beautifully. And the reason I think it's such a big deal for Posnanski to rate him number one is, I mean, his work is so well respected. His Baseball 100 book was phenomenal. He did the top 100 players total, and then he did another top 100 not in the Hall of Fame. And he doesn't just like cite statistics and just rattle off a bunch of stuff. There's a theme for every single thing he writes, and it's just so beautifully done. He gets the points across so wonderfully, and you read it and it's like, you know, there's no way I can disagree with this. It's just phenomenal stuff. All the things are laid out for you. You know, it is an amazing boost to Minnie's case. I think there was something going on before that leading up to this. The momentum was going. I could feel it. And I think that we finally reached that point that he's going to get in now. I mean, I think we no longer, you know, count out part of his career. We take the totality of it. The Negro Leagues are appreciated more and more and more now than they should be. And it is time.
Well, here's what Joe said. He came on the podcast last February, and he said this about Manny Minoso.
It bothers me that he did not go into the Hall of Fame while he was still alive. I think it's a real travesty in the sense of, I think people refuse to see how much he mattered to the game and how much he changed the game. And I think hopefully we'll see it now, and hopefully he'll get in the Hall of Fame, but I'll always be a little bit sad that, because I know he wanted that kind of recognition. I thought he felt like he deserved it. He would have been, what a party that would have been in Cooperstown for him to go in, you know? So I'm sad that that didn't happen, but I'm, like I say, I'm very optimistic that finally this year that wrong will be righted, I think.
Hear, hear, Chris. I hope that what Joe said becomes a reality December the 5th. And it would be a great story. And by the way, Dick Allen and Billy Pierce are on that committee as well. Not on the committee, but their names are going to be considered as well, right? And those both are of really those guys have cases, right?
Excellent cases, too. I have a feeling Dick Allen gets in. I'm not sure about Pierce, although I would say Pierce has an excellent case. I mean, he was one of the top two pitchers in the American League during the 1950s, clearly, him and Whitey Ford, and no one else is really in that class. So those two guys for sure. There's another White Sox-related guy that is on that list as well. It's John Donaldson. He is a former Negro League pitcher, but he was a White Sox scout, one of the first Black scouts, you know, in Major League Baseball history. And I think that, I mean, if you take his role as – a legendary pitcher and a scout. I think he deserves to be in there as well. So we'll see. There's a lot of good White Sox ties there. Jim Codd as well, former White Sox pitcher. So I think there's, I mean, I love the, I want to see a lot of these guys voted in. It's long overdue. At least many, hopefully Dick Allen, you know, John Donaldson, he's got a chance. Billy Pierce, I wish there was stronger support for him because I think that he was certainly one of the class of the 50s. Let's go. Let's have some fun at Cooperstown. I certainly want to make sure to get there if we have some good inductees.
Now we just need Chet Lemon in, and I'm satisfied.
Chet Lemon, good player, by the way.
No, we all have our favorite players growing up. That was my favorite player. He does not belong in Cooperstown, but he belongs in my own personal Cooperstown for what he meant to me as a kid watching the White Sox play. And they weren't very good, but Chet just stood out. There's no one on the field like Chet Lemon, and that's why he was a Hall of Famer in my book.
There's players in the Hall of Fame that are not as good players as Chet Lemon. I assure you that.
Well, hopefully. We're going to see at least Manny Minoso get in. Listen, it's become like the golden era of White Sox players getting into the Hall of Fame. Frank Thomas, Jim Thome, Hawk Harrelson, if you want to Harold include Baines. Him on there. Harold Baines. And
it is really nice. Yeah. Add Manny to that. That's a nice, you know, 5-6-7 year run.
Yeah. Hey, Chris Kampka, thank you so much for your time. Appreciate it. And let's hope we're coming back and doing a podcast in a couple of weeks talking about Manny getting into the Hall of Fame.
Done. I'm in. Let's do it.
That's a wrap for this edition of the White Sox Talk podcast, brought to you by Wintrust, your home for White Sox check-in, free ATMs nationwide. Go to the special White Sox webpage. It's www.wintrust.com/Sox. And the aforementioned Hawk Harrelson, take it away.
Thanks, Art Chuck. And this edition of the White Sox Talk podcast is over.